the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Big Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I'm back from All-Star Weekend. Matt Moore is back from finding every trade rumor he can have. He's Skyping with us. Matt, how's it going?
I'm good. I feel refreshed. I actually finally got some sleep last night after going. I got 12 hours in 4 days, I think.
Woo!
So that was healthy.
Yeah.
While you guys were living it up in Orlando.
If it makes you feel better, I didn't sleep Sunday night.
I am not surprised. This is not surprising to me.
I had a 7:50 a.m. flight, a direct flight, surprisingly, from Houston to Minneapolis. And the shindig we were at was over at 2, and I thought, I'm going to oversleep if I go to bed right now. So I stayed up, which was miserable, and made it to the Houston airport. Jerry Stackhouse was there with me at the Houston airport.
Really?
Wearing a bucket hat.
That's how was Stack?
Stack seemed like he was in a very tired mood as well. But pleasant to people. Very pleasant.
My Stackhouse story, earlier this year, I made fun of him for blowing a rotation.
Yes.
And he DM'd me on Twitter and just like first he like made a dismissive comment towards me, and then I responded publicly and I was like, all right, fine, explain it to me. I was like, explain, I don't know as much as you, you're a professional basketball player,
right?
Explain to me. And then like he DM'd me and walked me through the entire sequence and was like, here's why I couldn't do this, here's why I got stuck in no man's land, there was nothing I could do. And I was like, oh, well played. I thought that was really cool of him to reach out and explain that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I feel like he's a nice guy when you're not making fun of him.
So many NBA players. Like, so tell me about the experience. Tell me about the wonder. Tell me about the grandeur that was Houston.
It is the fastest, longest weekend of my life.
This is your first.
It was my first.
No, until I think Friday. This is your first. I felt like I hadn't prepared you. I should have given you protection.
I don't think there was a way to prepare me. It's just very like, everything is so rushed, and because everyone wants to get the hell out of there and not do their job, you know, like they, like the players don't want to talk to the media; they just want to hang out. That's one thing I took away, is how much the camaraderie of the whole weekend really means to these guys. Like, people freak out about, oh, there's no rivalry, you know, players just like each other. I think that's important. I think it gives the game more respect.
Yeah,
and I think you see how much they like being around each other. And, you know, this has been said many times with the whole, like, LeBron and KD working out together. But the biggest rivalries I've had in sports have come against my friends.
Yeah.
And I think that is important for the All-Star experience. So that was cool seeing all the camaraderie. But that's what they want. They don't want to talk to the media because it's all questions they've heard before. And they just want to go, like, hang out and do their own thing. The media, I don't feel like really wants to talk to them either. They kind of want to hang out and do their own thing. And so it's a very rushed mentality, but there's so much going on that it seems like a very long weekend at the same time.
It's interesting because I will say this, in their defense, they do a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Of media.
Oh, God.
Because you've got the media availability, which I'll get your perceptions of in a second, the greatest circus show in the world. And, you know, NBA TV is having these guys roll through, and they talked to almost every All-Star coming through and had them sit down for a 5-10 minute interview. And I know that they're doing like 10 of those.
Yeah.
Grayland had a good series that was with really great interviews with Zach Lowe. Like, all this stuff, you know, they're constantly doing this. I mean, their time is really taken up. It's one of the reasons I honestly, a lot of times, am like, one, I kind of feel like there should either be more time buffeted around the All-Star break, or we should have less, you know, media requirements from them. Because I'm very often like, man, like, they need the rest. They desperately need the rest, and they just don't get it. It's 4 days of just nothing but go, 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 go. And that's got to be really hard on them. As much as it's like, you know, they're still getting the best treatment and guided around. Like, they don't have the same hassles that we do. That's one of the things I've kind of learned is, the most exhausting thing about All-Star Weekend is just trying to get from place to place to place.
Like from Minneapolis to Houston?
Oh, yeah. You had yourself a little bit of trouble.
Oh, my God. I lost a night. That was the problem. I lost a night in Chicago for a direct flight. I don't know if we can.
Yeah, we can.
I don't know if we can disparage a potential sponsor or maybe an existing sponsor.
No, yeah, let's just say
I will just say airline. Airline screwed me.
The airlines.
I didn't know you could have any legal play. I wrote about this and I, you know, complained about it on Twitter for 3 days, but I didn't know you could have any legal flight. That is apparently a thing when there was a mechanical problem that delayed us like, I don't know, 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours. They fixed it. They boarded the plane. They closed the door. They were getting ready to push back. And then they found another mechanical problem because it's airline and that's what they do. And that's why they're delayed all the time or canceling flights all the time. And so at that point, the pilot came on and said because of this, because the door had been closed and they were ready for pushback and whatever, that plane could not fly out again. And they didn't have another plane because it wasn't just a plane. Like, it was one of those three-row jumbo jets you would take across across the Atlantic or something.
Yeah.
So it was like not just a plane you could replace. And let me tell you, seeing a plane that is half full of entourages and half full of baby mamas realize that they're not going to get an extra night at All-Star Weekend, that is a sour group. That is a very sour group.
Yeah, I imagine that went poorly.
Yeah, did not go over well.
You were so hopeful, too. You were like, maybe I'll be able to get out of here. And, like, the whole time I was thinking, you're not getting out of there.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Once they boarded, I really expected the flight to get canceled right away. Once they started having mechanical problems and seeing, like, the jet that it was, I thought it was going to get canceled. And then they boarded the plane. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm getting out of here tonight. Because I had already gone and, like, switched to, like, I had a foothold for a flight the next morning. I did that like an hour and a half into the first delay.
Yeah.
And so I went to customer service, got it. They said, yeah, you're on this flight tomorrow morning if you don't get out tonight. And then they boarded the plane. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm finally going to get there. I'm going to go watch, I'm going to go hang out with some guys, watch the end of Lakers Clippers, have a good time, and then get ready to work. No. Had to wait till 6 a.m. to fly out. Good times.
Good times.
Thank you, airline.
Thank you, airline. So media availability on Friday, you made it in. I've tried to explain it to people. It's so for those of you that don't know, for media availability, like they get a banquet room at a hotel, like one of your conference rooms. They put up tables all around, and they just kind of rotate the stars in.
Yeah,
and there's like four tiers of media. Some bloggers will sneak in, and then you'll have. Standard media.
Sure.
And then you'll have like elite media, which is like television. Like watching Stephen A. Smith work the All-Star Room is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Seeing those guys is just impressive.
Like we're not going to get into the discussion of media on this podcast. We don't do that on CBSSports.com. I will just say that Stephen A. Smith is amazing to watch glad hand and schmooze with stars. It is incredible.
Yeah.
His relationship. And it makes you really go, wow. Like,
it's a skill. It's an absolute skill.
And then you have international media.
Sure.
Which is my favorite.
Sure.
The only reason they are there for any reason whatsoever is to ask the players, can you give a shout out to your fans in China/Bulgaria/Italy?
That was one thing. Paul George was there because of three-point contest and as an all-star. And during the three-point contest session, I felt bad that he had to do both. That kind of sucked.
Yeah.
He got ushered in, had to leave for the Western Conference, and then come back for the Eastern Conference. That was kind of messed up. But yep. He did it. He was a good soldier. He seemed to have some good conversations with people. But during the first part of his session, a Japanese reporter goes up to him and says, can you give a shout-out and a message to your friends or to your fans in Japan? And he said, what up, Japan? I love you. Like, really? that can't be what you wanted to talk about at media day.
So yeah, it's a circus and it's a show and I would say it was better than maybe the last two All-Star games I've seen. I would say it's better than 2011, 2012. I don't think it's as good as 2010. 2010 was pretty good. I would say that it was better than the last two though, and in terms of overall quality, Rookie Sophomores was surprisingly entertaining.
Yeah, I don't know if it was – that's what I couldn't tell. I've actually started rewatching some of the stuff this morning because it's been on NBA TV. But So during commercials of CBS Sports Network, I've been, you know, switching over just to catch a 30-second glimpse. Before
it's a brand new show.
Yeah, before I click back and support the sponsors of the network. But it actually, like, at the time I was there, I thought, oh, this has been a fun weekend. Like, everything's been pretty good. Like, the competition's been pretty good. Save for a few things in the dunk contest, it's been pretty good. But I wonder if it's translating to home. And it does seem like it actually translated to home. Like, it was a pretty competitive game both Friday and Sunday. And I thought it was just a really well-done weekend.
My biggest regret was not getting you credentialed for the celebrity game.
That was a
huge mistake on our part.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was a separate credential.
I think I actually got the request.
Oh, okay.
From somebody, I think from our friends at the NBA, and I just didn't think about it. Like, it didn't translate in my brain.
Yeah.
And like next year, we'll be sure to make to get, because like that would have been prime for you. I'll tell you, it was. I've seen a lot of celebrity games, and that's a lot of time I'm never gonna get back in my life.
Yeah.
This one was one of the worst.
Sure.
If Arnie Duncan didn't have the ball, it was not good.
Yeah, it's weird how you need basketball players, just even mildly competent basketball players, to watch play basketball.
Yep. I was talking about how like Tamika Catchings needed to get the ball more, and they're like, she just airballed it. I'm like, well, yeah, she just airballed one shot in the celebrity game. I was like, but overall, she's also the best player on the floor.
Right. Somebody, exactly.
Please give the Olympian the ball.
Yeah. Exactly.
People get irritated at me for being such a sourpuss about everything, and I took your advice to heart and tried to enjoy the All-Star game more. I really tried to enjoy just the All-Star game.
Yeah.
It's just something fun, but then people take it seriously.
That's like, the thing. It's hard to turn off, like, especially for basketball nerds like us, it is hard to turn off that analytical part when you're watching basketball. Like, it's really hard to do. I don't think... And that's not a complaint necessarily, or like, oh, look at us, we're so smart about basketball. It's just we're so trained to try to look for things here and there that when you have an exhibition where no one cares except for the last 3 minutes of the game, or if you're Joakim Noah, you care at all times. But if
you can't turn it off, man.
But in, you know, except for those moments, like, it's hard to just look back, sit back and look at it and be like, this is a celebration of the game. Look at these guys having fun. Because we... You know, we wouldn't have jobs if we didn't try to break down basketball, right?
Right.
It's very hard to make it just being a fan.
Well, it's like, you know, I was like trying to be like, oh, it's all just fun and games, and you know, everyone's just kind of having a good time, and alley oops, and look at this and that, and this is just kind of fun. And then Kobe blocks LeBron, and then all of a sudden, it's a referendum on both players' careers.
Sure. As what happened last year.
And I'm just. You know, and at that point, like, I took a pillow and put it over my face and tried to smother myself.
You tried to fight that basic natural instinct to want to breathe.
Because I was like, I don't want to deal with the next 12 hours. I just don't. I don't want to deal with the next 12 hours. And sure enough, that right there is why Kobe will always be better than LeBron.
Sure.
And then I'm like trying to think, can I throw myself out the window while I'm smothering myself?
Yeah, because LeBron didn't know that they were trying again.
Right. You know, the dunk contest is... I found myself thinking a lot about the dunk contest.
Yes.
Because for a while, it the first dunk, it was phenomenal. Gerald Green's first dunk was great.
Yeah, that was...
Off the side of the backboard, first attempt, perfect pass, pump reverse. Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
And then it got horrible for a round and a half.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it got good again.
Yeah, the finals were really good.
And the finals were really good.
They weren't an all-timer, but they were very good.
No, they weren't an all-timer, but you know, Terrence Ross did what I think needed to happen, which is like just dunked. No props.
All right, we need to talk about this, and I think Tom Zeller wrote about it a little bit. The no props thing I do not agree with.
Yeah, this is like a thing now. Like there's a counter movement of being pro prop.
Because here's the thing. Props, when executed properly, are phenomenal. JaVale McGee, he used props and he was really good at it. Like really good at it. Guys have used props before and it's been really dumb. Gerald Green, used a card table, you know, a blackjack table as a prop, and that was really stupid. It didn't really do anything. He also then used a cupcake as a prop, and it was awesome. Like, their props are not bad. It's using props in a clever, creative, and necessary way. If you're using Kevin Hart as a prop, it's just going to be annoying. If you're using, you know, if you're blowing out a cupcake or whatever, it's pretty great.
I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that. The fact that the kid that Ross dunked over was the Twitter kid was kind of a nice touch.
It would have been cool if they explained that, though.
Yeah, I wish he'd explain. Well, I actually kind of like it better than. Well, no, you're right. Because that's the other thing I said. I think with, like, here, I never thought I would say this. Jeremy Evans' dunk was too smart for us.
Yes.
Like, Jeremy Evans dunking over a painting of himself dunking over a painting of himself dunking over a painting of himself dunking that he painted himself 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
Like, that's a magnificent dunk that, but here's, I was also thinking, I was like, if he'd explained that, if he'd taken it off and explained it, would it have been better? And I'm like, I don't know if it would have.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Here's, the thing that, because last year it was so, or the last 2 years, it's been so like, oh, here's the script, you know, like, oh, we have to get something out to explain the dunk before, and it's been awful. Like that, I'm glad we didn't have that this time. Because it's a really bad aspect. But for certain dunks, like the Jeremy Evans one, it would have been cool to have an explanation beforehand.
Like Ziller and I are in the same place about this. To me, one of I should actually do this in the summer. We should go back and do a conversation of the best like forgotten dunks of the dunk contest over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Like Gerald Green's cupcake dunk, even though it's well known amongst bloggers, like that one's one that I had to remind people of. Like I was talking to a bunch of like the normal. Hesitate the word, but mainstream or whatever, media, the traditional guys in Denver. And I was like, well, the cupcake dunk. And they're like, what? And I'm like, cupcake? What? How do you guys not know this? Paul George's Tron dunk is one for me. Like, no one really remembers, like, that was a really cool dunk. Like,
yeah.
The execution of it itself was, the actual dunk itself was really good. And the idea I thought was really pretty cool. I feel like if maybe he had just more lights, it would have been cooler. But
yeah, if he could have had like a black light spotlight following him.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if that's a thing, but if not, I would like the patent for that because I just invented it. But if that had been there, it would have been better. Like it was a cool idea. There was a better way to execute it.
Like Kenneth Faried's second dunk was really good. Like, he had a really good second dunk. Eric Bledsoe's second dunk was really good.
Yeah, that was the portion of the dunk contest where they just did Jason Richardson dunks.
Yeah.
Which
it's fine.
Let's just say that I've wanted to mention this all weekend, but I didn't want the hassle of my Twitter mentions becoming sweltering. But Vince Carter is obviously the greatest dunk contestant ever. Like that can't be disputed. He had the greatest dunk contest and he's the greatest dunk contest dunker in NBA history. Second is not Michael Jordan or Dominique Wilkins. It's Jason Richardson.
I agree.
Like, he's just been better. And the whole Neek versus MJ dunk contest, you know, final round, was not as good as the Desmond Mason, Jason Richardson one. Like, that's, you know, the allure of the big star. And this is another thing I'd like to discuss with you, is the allure of the big star and the big name is what people say they want. But I don't agree with that. Because we've had plenty of great dunk contests where the winner wasn't a star. You know, you had Isaiah Ryder do it, and the winner wasn't a star. You had Harold Miner. And these were great dunk contests that people loved at the time. And you don't need a star. You just need execution.
This is going to sound, and this, I bet you and I agree with this. It makes sense for kind of how I think in my I'll admit it, like very gimmicky world my brain works in. Because I think it's just the like my drama background, because I'm a very dramatic person. And did drama in the whole thing. I really liked it when they named the dunks, because you brought up Isaiah Ryder, like the East Bay Funk dunk, like that,
yeah.
Like resonates with me. Like I have a whole image and like a concept around that.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I don't want to use the word brand because that involves money and marketing and billing, but I like the idea of like a whole concept around the dunk.
Completely agree.
Like when DeRozan did the East Bay Funk Dunk remix, I was like, "That's cool. Yeah. That's really cool."
Yeah.
Like I really liked that Ross like did the homage to Carter. Like that was really cool.
Yeah, and like Josh Smith did the homage to Dominique back when he won it. Like those things do really stand up.
Yeah, So I don't know how much anger I have left for this argument, because you and I battled about it on Campfire on Saturday night.
Yes, I was quite animated about this.
Do you want to argue about the James White? I don't know how much energy I have left for it. So if you just want to yell, you can probably win. I'm not going to fight you too hard.
I will say this, and I say this with as much respect as I can give while still making my point as emphatically as I want to. I believe that if you thought the flight crew coming out for James White was a stupid, gimmicky prop, I think that's an idiotic sentiment. I thought it was brilliant. Knowing him, knowing his history in dunk contests, he has a nickname that was given to him. His nickname was given to him as Flight White. Like, this is something that has been with him since he was a high schooler. He didn't try to jump over the flight crew. He didn't try to, like, grab one of the, you know, glow sticks or whatever the hell they use, one of the flashlights, as he went up for the dunk. He didn't try to do any of that. All he did was run down a corridor of flight crew. I thought that was brilliant. I thought it was subtle, but yet brilliant and kind of fit in with his persona. Now, the fact that he missed the first dunk long while getting the free throw line, that blew my mind. I would say that's the most impressive part of the dunk contest this weekend. Now, maybe that says more about the contest or more about my expectations, or I don't know what it says. But the fact that he went long on a dunk from the free throw line is insane. His second dunk, he is maybe 4 to 6 inches inside the free throw line, which people seem, like yourself, you seem to care about the fact that he didn't get the free throw line. That's true. He still had the ball with two hands, cocked it back below his head. There's a screenshot I think I put on CBSSports.com. Yep. The ball is at his shoulders. He cocked it back, flushed it through, and with ease and some velocity. Like it wasn't a stretch. It wasn't the Vince Carter where he's a full step in front of the free throw line and barely grazes the two rims and caps off his dunk contest. It wasn't the Josh Smith one where he has to stretch out and get it. He got that with ease. 4 inches in, 6 inches in at the free throw line, that doesn't matter to me, because if you took away the line and I said, this guy's going to jump from 14 feet, 8 inches and throw down a two-handed dunk with ease and by cocking it back like that, it would blow your mind. But the fact that there is a line there, I think it lets people cloud the judgment of how great the dunk was. Now, I don't think he should have moved on. I don't think he should have made it to the finals. He blew that second dunk attempt multiple times. He screwed himself over. But the fact that he got 1 of 45 for that dunk, and 2, people thought it wasn't impressive, that's insane to me.
Here's one thing I'm going to tell you. The angle on the dunk was not great, and I didn't catch enough of the replay. Right now, as we speak, I'm watching the Phantom replay on YouTube. Yeah. The Phantom stuff is really great.
Oh, it's great.
He did cock it back. That's,
I mean,
true,
he cocks it way back. And
which
this
I
is...
didn't catch. Here's a big thing, and I'll say this, because this is something that separates, I think, this is something that I'm bad at, right? Is, God, he was so far across the line.
He's 4 inches in.
But there's like so much white space, or there's so much space between him and the shoe, between the line and the shoe.
Sure, that's fine.
Two-handed dunks are harder.
Yes.
And that doesn't translate when you watch it.
Yeah.
Like, a one-handed dunk looks more impressive.
Yeah.
Whereas a two-handed dunk is harder. And I've discovered this, and that's one of the things I was like, oh. And mostly because, like, my dunking experience is on, like, Nerf hoops. Like, I don't know. I'm not dunking. Like, that's not happening.
Right.
It was never an option for me. You're right that when he went long, if he landed the first one, it probably went more impressive. Because on one of those, you need the elevation.
Yeah.
And I'm even watching the replay right now. He's not as high above the – and I know it's like, because he jumped so far. I get that. But – you still need to have a high level of elevation at the point of contact, I think, to make it as impressive as you need to. Not to say that this is not impressive, because part of it is like, look, all these are impressive. By the way, you said that him going along was the most impressive thing about the entire dunk contest. That's actually not true. The impressive part is that Terrence Ross did not kill that kid.
Okay, that's fair.
Because there was a part of me that was like, this could be one of the most memorable moments in dunk contest history for all the wrong reasons. Like, you can tell David Stern somewhere is like gripping his gin and tonic.
Yeah, here's the thing. On the last dunk that he misses in the second round of attempts for him, I guess is the best way to put it, He does a windmill. He gets the free throw line. He does a windmill, and he misses that long. Yeah. Think about that.
Yep.
You miss a windmill free throw line dunk long.
Yep.
Like, granted, I mean, I agree. He should not have gone on. Terrence Ross won it fair and square. So James White and Gerald Green really, really just screwed up the, you know, their chance to move on to the finals and win. But the fact that James White went long on that, it still blows my mind. Like, I can't get over that.
I liked Ross's performance a lot.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Jeremy Evans, his dunks were pretty good. The Mark Eaton one was just
I didn't
understand it.
Yeah, that was. I mean, you know, I did like that. I got to make a joke though that Mark Eaton's still ruining shots at the rim.
A lesson for anybody that would happen to listen to this, pass along to your dunk contest participant friends. If you're going to jump over somebody, they cannot be sitting. That ship has sailed.
And if your counter to that is, well, it's Mark Eaton, he's 7'4", well, then don't use Mark Eaton.
Then don't use Mark
Eaton. Go jump over Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah.
Part of
me wonders if somebody had asked Yao and he'd said no.
So. Yeah, maybe.
I also wonder, like, you know, somebody should have dunked over Dream. That's what they should have done. That would have been pretty cool.
I don't think Dream would have allowed that.
At the last minute, he swats it.
Yeah.
Oh, God!
I think he would have just, like, he can't turn that switch off. Here's the thing that just popped in my head, and I wonder what you think about it. I don't think dunk contest judges, if we're going to be using them as a way to move on to the round like we do, I don't think they should be sitting where they sit. I think it's a terrible angle to judge a dunk contest.
I agree.
Like, they should be up a little bit, or in a booth, or on the NBA TV set. Like, they should have a little bit of distance and a better perspective on it.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like that's a good spot to really get the whole thing. And this has been said before, I completely agree with it. They really should get a replay.
Yeah.
Before they give their score.
Gerald Green wins a dunk contest with a cupcake dunk if you see the replay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I definitely think that. Well, unless they believe that one was predetermined, which is a valid argument.
Yeah.
I've been saying this. I've done a bunch of radio spots the last couple of days, and they always ask me, like, "What do you think about the dunk contest?" And you've talked about the star measure. My thing is, I try and construct what do people like. What are narratives people like? Because we're able to construct a narrative here. Like, we're not interfering with the concept of sport because it's completely an exhibition. And to me, people like one dominant figure and they want to find one underdog because people will gravitate to one or the other. So
yeah.
They're either going to really want – like LeBron's not an option, but they're really going to want whoever the established star is to do it. And then a lot of people are going to latch on to, you know, I think this guy could actually beat him, and how cool would that be if this guy beat out somebody really big?
Yeah.
The biggest thing is you have to have a star that's willing to be like, I don't care if I lose a dunk contest.
Right.
It's ridiculous because it's like they don't care about anything during the weekend, and yet they're prideful about it. And that makes no sense to me. Like, it's okay if you lose. Like, nobody's going to blame you if you lose. If you win.
If you're LeBron James, that's not true. If he entered a dunk contest and didn't win, that would melt the internet.
Yeah, but is it going to melt it worse than him blowing the series in 2011? No.
Well, like, no, but that's...
There's nothing you... At this point, I believe this... After watching him talk about Jordan this weekend, because it was pretty amazing to watch him talk about Jordan.
Yeah.
Like, the comments, like, it really shows you he's a really thoughtful, intelligent, like, well-spoken guy, which is impressive considering, like, these guys never had a minute of college education. Like, he has, like, these really great thoughts about which is not to say that you need a college education, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He has these really great thoughts about Jordan and the whole thing. And you just tell, like, he wasn't bothered by it. He was like, that's fine. Jordan doesn't think I'm the – he's like, that's okay. He's like, I'm just telling you the titles are a bad way to judge it because I've talked to all these great guys. And he brought up Barkley, which is my favorite one to mention. It drives me nuts because, like, I mean, Barkley took a ton of grief this weekend for not having a ring. And you can tell that at some point he's just like, all right, enough.
Yeah.
Because it's just like – and it irritates me especially because now we're so far removed. I mean, there's people that weren't – they're watching the NBA now who were not born in 93. And I just want to be like, do you understand how good he was?
Yeah, I mean – Charles Barkley was so good that they found a way to give him the MVP in 1993 instead of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Who was in the middle of completing a three-peat.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good Charles Barkley was. And whether you think it was the right call or not, he was good enough to warrant the discussion and to give it to him.
So I think it's one where And even if you want to remove LeBron, because LeBron's like his whole thing, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You need the star, and then you need like the established guys. Although I will say this, you notice like Jordan did dunk contest when he was younger too.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to get the stars that are right there, and part of it is we haven't really had.
Kobe did it when he was young.
I'm trying to think about like the top guys over the past couple of years because they've primarily been point guards, right? Like the top picks have been either point guards or big men, like Anthony Davis,
right?
And like just going backwards, like there's all these guys that aren't really those kind of guys.
That's the thing. You, looking at the top like 10 players in the league, is there other than LeBron? Is there a great dunker where you? I mean, Dwight's done it. You know, Dwight, there would be no reason for Dwight to do it again.
I don't know why he won't do it. I want Russell Westbrook badly.
Yeah. But I don't think he has the personality to want to do something like that.
But that's why he should do it, because he should be villainous about it. Like
go up and try to block someone's dunk on their attempt.
Like, all he should do is
throw up banana peels on the court.
I just want to see him like constantly chirping and yelling at him. Like, get him into the finals and then have him right up in the guy's ear. Like, you're gonna blow this.
What would be great is if he could do a free throw line dunk and save it for the last attempt, and then he like comes out and like pretends to tie someone to like lays down train tracks, ties a damsel in distress there, has a wax mustache and twirls it, you know, mischievously, and then dunks over it from the free throw line. Like, that would be great.
The villainous dunk.
That's a prop dunk I can get behind.
The other thing, and I've wanted this for years, like, what he should do is, and this is one you'd have to explain, right? But hire a company to build something that measures the level of impact of a dunk.
Yeah.
Like, how much force it registers.
Didn't they do that with didn't they do that last year? Didn't some MIT kids come up with that?
Yeah, I think actually they did. I think they may have measured the force of the impact.
Yeah.
Like, bring that back and say, this is your standard, here's what I'm going to hit. And then just, like, just kill the rim. Just destroy it.
And I think for what would be a cool thing is for each, if you had that tied in, like, for have something set up predetermined for each level it hits, for each measurement, and then have, like, oh, it measured an 88. That would be like a wrecking ball hitting a building, and then you flash that on the screen or something like that. You know, like some kind of tie into that to really drive home the force.
A bunch of the guys told Royce Young, we got posts on Ion Basketball. The guys were talking about if they made the finals, what they were going to do. And I'm actually really glad that several of them did not make it, because two of them were like, "Oh, I was going to do under both legs." And I'm looking at Kenneth Faried, and I'm just like, George Karl would be having a heart attack. Like, you're going to hurt yourself. Do not do that.
It's a cool dunk. You know, the Flight Brothers have done it before in dunk contests. It's a cool dunk, but I don't know that it translates any more than it does through one leg.
DeRozan's first one, it took him a couple of attempts, but watching it in slow motion, DeRozan's are one where I look back at his and in slow motion, and I'm just like, damn, that was great. Like, behind the back 360.
Yeah.
And his second one, where he just like he went up and did a 360, like the level of impact on throwing it down, and that's what Shaq was saying. Shaq was like, "Look at how hard he throws it down," and it's and Ernie Johnson was like, "It's clean." That's a big thing to me, is how much rim you catch.
Yeah.
Like, if you're able to get the ball through and just and with no, with without catching, that to me is like a massive. That's good points for you. That's
yeah, and Gerald Green, his double through the hoop or whatever the hell it was gonna, whatever it is. Even when he got it, after his attempts didn't count anymore, it wasn't clean. Like, it was a cool dunk, it was a cool concept, but it wasn't, like, if it's not clean, it really does affect how it looks and how you think about it.
So, fun weekend, good times.
Excellent times. Love it. I'd do it again.
But my favorite part is actually that week after the trade deadline, or after the All-Star break, because of the trade deadline, and because it's like, all right, the guys have had their break, and they all talk about this too. They're like, had the break, it was nice, it's good to get refreshed, it's go time.
Yeah.
Like, from now for 2 months, we got 2 months, it's playoff seeds, playoff races, let's make some trades, let's get down to business.
I felt the same way. I felt the same way. I didn't sleep Sunday night to Monday morning, didn't sleep. I got like a 2 hour nap yesterday afternoon, went to bed at 10 last night, woke up at, I don't know, 7:30 this morning, and I felt refreshed. I felt, I want to go to work.
Good.
I mean, by go to work, you know, my couch and turn on my computer, but that's what I wanted to do, and I can relate to those that want to get back to it, get some trades done, and let's finish out the season.
Good, because I want to go to bed. Because I haven't slept, and I've written like 48 posts in 4 days, and I'm exhausted. And my wife got back, but I had to send her away for the weekend because I had to work so much with the kid. And she gets back, and she's like, "How are you?" And I was like, "You seen Return of the Jedi?" And she's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "I'm more caffeine now than man." Like that's how I feel. Because at one point I looked over and looked at the pile of Red Bulls I drank just to be able to function and was like, "This is not okay." And my heart kind of palpitated once and was like, "You're right, this is not okay."
Like, oh, my liver is screaming right now.
It's not good. We never got a chance to talk about Heat Thunder.
No, because I didn't watch it because I was stuck in an airport.
Yeah, you need to catch a replay of it. Some interesting stuff just because of kind of the gap, and there's a lot of people that are taken away from that there's kind of a gap there. I'm like, well, let's see how Oklahoma City does. The West is going to be really interesting from here on out, I think. I'm starting to think that I think Oklahoma City is clearly the best. I think San Antonio is clearly right behind them just by a hair, and there's clearly a gap between them and the Clippers, and there's clearly a gap between the Clippers and everybody else.
Yes.
I do think, however, that there is a very good chance we could see some chaos, at least in a series or two. In the playoffs.
Oh, for sure. Out in the West, absolutely.
I don't feel like anybody is...
I still feel like the Clippers are up there with the Thunder and the Spurs.
I feel like I feel like nobody is immune. I feel like the Heat are pretty much immune in the East.
A lot has to go wrong for them to not make it.
Yeah. But in the West, if you told me the Nuggets made the Western Conference Finals, I wouldn't be surprised. If you told me that they made the Finals, I would be shocked. If you told me that the Warriors made the Western Conference Finals, I wouldn't be surprised. If you told me they made the Finals, I would be shocked.
Yeah.
Same for Memphis. And that's kind of the gap, right?
Right. And then have the last two seeds.
Yeah, the Spurs, Thunder, and Clippers, you're not going to be surprised that they make the Finals.
Right.
Versus everybody else, it'd be surprising. But you're also, I think, the big key there is I would be shocked. Like, I'm not shocked if any team in those top three teams in the West win the West. I also would not be shocked if they lost in the West, any of them.
Right.
And in the East, I would be shocked if Miami lost. And so I think that's kind of the gap for me. And honestly, I mean, and then I guess you kind of compare it because in the East, I also like the Pacers get knocked off in the first round. I wouldn't be like, oh my, how could this happen? I'd be like, okay, well. The offense didn't show up. That makes sense.
Right.
You know, the Knicks lost in the first round. I'd be like, oh, they played Boston or Chicago. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But in the West, I feel like there is a legitimate chance for any of those three teams. And obviously there has to be, like, even one of them has to lose in the second round. But I feel like there's a legitimate chance for any of them to lose prior to the Western Conference Finals.
Talking about the Thunder made me think of this real quick. Actually, the highlight of the weekend was definitely at the end of the Western Conference All-Stars availability on Friday, was James Harden still talking to someone at his table, Kevin Durant walking by and saying, "Hurry up, cupcake," and then Harden just left. He left where he went and like said hello to Durant, and they just walked out together. That was that was the highlight.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We have some trade stuff to talk about.
We do, and I have invited over the next couple of days. You can email us, zach.harper@cbsinteractive.com, or you can tweet and tag it with the hashtag EOBpod. But I want to discuss some like trade rumors or trade ideas that we have been talking about, or we have been given, or that people have for us. And I think we have some good ones. There's you know, rumors of a Redick Knicks deal possibly, or at least discussions. And that actually brings us to the first one, is at M Devolution, how realistic is a Redick for Shumpert and X player deal? And does it make sense? And I wanted to wonder what you think. Like, to get it to work, you know, under the rules, it would have to be somebody like Shump and Marcus Camby. Because Redick makes $6 million and Shump only makes like 1.2 or 1.4. And so you have to throw in another contract if you're the Knicks, or find a way to swing a 3-team deal. But do you think that it would be a good deal for both sides?
I don't think it would be a good deal for the Knicks, but it definitely sounds like something they would do, because I was trying to explain this, because everyone's like, why would you trade him on Shumpert? He's so young. That's the point. Like, the Knicks, look at what their entire motto right now is: veteran, 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 veteran. That's all they care about.
I mean, you might as well sell it all.
Like, they want to win right now. They're willing to do whatever it takes, and that means bringing in veterans. They can't have any patience.
Right.
There's no time. You know, it's like, we've got to win right now, and it's, well, you're not going to, and they don't understand that. So they're like, no, we'll bring in Redick, and then he'll space the floor. And I made the comment last night, I was like, man, how awesome is it going to be when J.J. Redick's on the floor for Carmelo and JR not to pass to in the playoffs? Like,
yeah,
it's going to be amazing. I mean, is he another great shooter? Yeah. Would I rather have him on the floor than Pablo Prigioni? Absolutely. He's a better player than Pablo Prigioni.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's also one where it's basically, it makes Novak irrelevant. Because it's like, you have, it's Steve Novak with defense. Like, why don't you play Novak if you have J.J. Redick? Go, you know, go big.
I think what it does is it allows you to not have to rely on J.R. Smith so much. I don't know. If he's out of control for multiple stretches.
Woodson's not stopping him. He hasn't stopped him all year. He hasn't had an
option not to stop him.
Woodson's just gonna roll his eyes and be like,
no, but they don't.
JR.
No, they don't have.
It's like the end of a sitcom.
No, they don't have the depth to stop him. So what else are you gonna do? But if you have J.J. Redick out there, J.R. Smith is doing J.R. Smithy things and not working out for you. You can say, all right, we're gonna go with Redick. He can absolutely stop him. And I think he would if they had that kind of depth. If Shumpert was healthy, I think there would be less chance for J.R. Smith to be out of control because you could just go to Shumpert.
I mean, I like it for Orlando. Like, you need to move Redick, you probably will get a good package back, and you'll get Iman Shumpert. Like, that's a good – to me, that works. They need to get a pick with it is a big part of it. Like,
and that's the tricky part because Knicks don't have any picks to give because you can't trade multiple years anytime soon.
Right. I don't know, maybe trying to target one. I don't know. I'm always of the opinion with these things that you target down the line. That you basically, you just, like, it's hard to get out of one when you target him, like, way down the line. Like, a 2018 one. Like,
yeah.
Like, I think there's a limit on how far out you can go. But I would just find the next one available and be like, I'll do it for this one. And Knicks will probably be like, sure, we'll still be in contention then. And then you laugh all the way to the bank.
Right.
As far as a package, like, I would just, you know, look, Camby has been hurt. He's inconsistent. They don't have a lot of bigs, but they have some. Like, go ahead. I mean, Copeland's played okay. Send Shumpert and Camby, and then the Magic will just buy out Camby, and Camby can go join the Heat. Like, that makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that, everybody wins there. There's no loser there.
Right.
So I think that's not a bad option. I just don't necessarily think it's going to help the Knicks all that much. And I disagree.
I think it does help the Knicks.
It's going to be weird with Redick because it looks like the teams that are really targeting, I don't think he's going to have as much of an impact on. I don't like him in Milwaukee, who's been rumored. I don't like him in New York, which has been rumored. Memphis and Chicago are the two places where I'm like, he makes a huge impact there.
Yeah.
So, and I've said before on this podcast earlier in the year that I worry about Redick going to the locker room, but the Grizzlies' locker room is a lot different now. So, not necessarily more amicable, but I think it's okay because they've had more change. So I think they're going to be more open to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Next one.
@Tim_Gamble, who would you recommend for the Orlando Magic? This is a very interesting thing because they shouldn't be in the business of acquiring veterans, right?
Nope.
They should be trying to get cap space and picks.
Yep.
But are there young guys that you think are available that they should target to try to, like, I mean, Shumpert's obviously one that you think they should get, or at least try to get. What do you do if you're a team like that at the deadline? And do they know that they're that team? That's the thing, is that, you know, some of it's been confusing here and there. I don't know that they know that.
I think part of it, because Ken Berger talked a little bit about how we may be looking at a quiet trade deadline because so many teams are worried about the repeater tax.
Yes.
Which makes sense. For me, honestly, it's more about dropping salary than it is about who they get. So my big objectives would be to get max value for J.J. Redick, and then I would really target – I would try and find anyone that needs a point guard and say, you know, Jameer Nelson, we'll take your short-term trash back.
Yeah.
If you can throw us in a second rounder, like compile second-round picks. That's where the Magic are at. Like, that'd be okay.
Yeah.
I just – if I'm the Magic, I want to liquidate everything that's long-term.
Sure.
Glenn Davis's injury really hurts them. because I would really love to move Glenn Davis.
And I think you could have. He was having a pretty good year.
Yeah, he was having a good year, and he's still like a viable big that can do some things. So I think there would have been an opportunity there.
A couple weeks ago, you could have tricked Boston into trading back for him.
I don't know if I go that far considering how things got with him, but it's
a couple weeks
not
ago.
Like young players that you look at because it's like, well, who's like the best young player in the market? It's Eric Bledsoe. Yeah. And the Clippers are only trading that for an elite piece.
Yeah,
so you're not really getting that. I think there are probably some guys you can probably find.
What if, idea. Could you have worked out in a Flalo for Bledsoe deal? I know the money's tricky, but could you have taken Caron Butler and Bledsoe for a Flalo and, God, I don't know, Mo Harkless?
The Clippers board wouldn't go for it because they want a bigger name than a Flalo. A Flalo would be like the best player of anybody outside of KG that they've been rumored to get.
Right.
But, the Paul Millsap rumor was the dumbest thing of the weekend. That was the one that made me crazy.
That was great.
talk about
that one for a little bit.
Because I want Paul Millsap to be traded so badly because I think he's such an impact guy. I look at him as like, this is probably too much. I feel like Millsap can be your Bosch for another team. He's pretty good, man. Like,
yeah, I think there's a pretty big gap, though, between him and Bosch.
I believe that more after actually Thursday, man. Go watch Bosch on Thursday. He was pretty amazing. Like, nobody talked about it because LeBron was God mode.
Yeah.
But Bosch killed the Thunder, just murdered him. But I feel like he could be that good. But yeah, him going to the Clippers, God, you're gonna run out Blake Griffin and Paul Millsap against the Lakers? What do you?
Yeah, no. Why not?
Or even against like the Grizzlies? Like you're gonna run?
Oh my God, that would have been murder.
You're gonna have Paul Millsap guarding Marc Gasol? That's your plan?
Right.
Come on now. Next trade.
This wasn't submitted, but it was floated my way either late last night or early this morning. I think I saw it this morning. Maybe I saw it last night. I don't know. Everything's a blur because of a lack of sleep. Someone was asking about Ben Gordon to the Wolves for I don't know. I think it was like, well, first of all, it was like, would
don't
you
do this? Don't be mean to that guy.
Oh, well, I'm not gonna say his name, but would you do Ben Gordon? Would you want Ben Gordon on the Wolves? He can shoot threes. And I said, no, absolutely not. Like nobody wants Ben Gordon. And then he said, well, you know, the only deal I could get. I'm paraphrasing here, so maybe I'm gonna ruin the sentiment of how it was presented. But it basically got to the point of the only deal I could see was Derek Williams and Barea for Ben Gordon, and Charlotte wouldn't do that. And I was like, Charlotte wouldn't do that.
Who is it for Ben Gordon?
Derek Williams and Barea. Charlotte wouldn't do that? Charlotte would throw in a first-round protected pick to do that.
I mean, Charlotte would definitely do that.
Oh my God, yes. They get rid of Ben Gordon's contract, Ben Gordon's attitude, and you get the number two pick from the 2011 draft. Whether you think he's good or not, they can build him. Like, they can go with it. Like, they can put that next to MKG and Kemba Walker and Bismack Biyombo, and you've got a good young core. Like they would do that in a second. That is insane that someone thinks that they wouldn't do that.
Why aren't the Wolves going to do it?
Because, yeah, and I believe either you said this or maybe Steve McPherson said this, that that Ben Gordon has said like he might not exercise his player option. Did you say that?
Yeah.
You put him on the Wolves, who potentially should be a playoff team, he's absolutely going to take $12 million next year. And then that puts them in the luxury tax. So it's one, Ben Gordon just isn't good enough to go into the luxury tax for. That doesn't make any sense to me. None of that conversation made sense to me.
I get the idea of putting it, I like the idea of
if Ben Gordon made $3 million a year, maybe. He doesn't. He makes 12.
I like the model, I guess, of putting a player like Gordon next to Rubio with Love. I like the idea of adding a shooter like that.
Sure.
because this long athletic white guy thing is not working out.
Oh, well, we don't know if it's not working out. They're injured.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're injured.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
We don't know if it works or if it doesn't work. I'm not saying it would work.
I always get worried about these things because I always try to look at whether things are like from a constructional concept, even because will one player come back and change everything, and then as well, it's more like the four guys.
Right. Yeah.
There. I mean, I guess if Budinger's that guy, yeah.
I mean, it was a very small sample size. They played their best basketball of the season with Budinger.
I do like Rubio, Gordon, Budinger, Love, Pekovic, though.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's a really good lineup.
If Ben Gordon doesn't want to be I'll just say jerk. If he doesn't want to be a jerk, yeah, that would be fun. He's got attitude issues. He's had attitude issues wherever he goes. Like, I don't know that you want to add that, that potential for disruption. Like, they just tried to get rid of all their questionable character guys.
Peck will keep him in line.
That's true. That's a valid point. Peck will just say the bear is angry.
You will not complain.
Yeah. last one that I just wanted to... I can't really talk about. Someone floated an idea of Luke Ridenour for Courtney Lee. In theory, it might work. Let's just say Courtney Lee is not going to play for the Timberwolves. That's as much as I can get into it.
Okay.
But I like the idea in theory. Practicality doesn't work.
The other big trade rumors. We've got our trade buzz post up on CBSSports.com. You should check it out.
Josh Smith everything. What about Josh Smith, Monte Ellis?
I guess I'm not totally surprised at this idea. Because you know the Ferry's got to be... it sounds like a really... You know me. I tend to lean towards Monte can turn it around.
Let's say Monte does turn it around. No one is going to throw a party like the party you're going to throw.
There's going to be hats, streamers.
Yeah.
I'm going to have James Harden with a bunch. Never mind. speaking of things we can't talk about. I want to believe, but it also sounds like a really good calculated idea from Ferry where, all right, let's bring him in. If he and Teague work and we all of a sudden, if this like clicks, awesome. Then I can justify re-signing him.
Yeah.
If it doesn't.
You still have cap space.
If it works okay, but not great, and Ellis likes it enough to re-sign for moderate value instead of uber dollars, if he actually makes that decision, which is not, you know, if J.R. Smith will take $2 million, I can believe in anything at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that happens, okay, great. If it doesn't work out, we'll let him go. If it works out okay and he wants $12 million per, then I can let him go and use the cap space elsewhere.
Right.
It gives him a lot of options, I think. So I kind of like the idea. I've been thinking all weekend about Josh Smith, Larry Sanders. I'm trying to get my brain around that idea.
Sure. Is there any – real quick, tangent. Shocker, I know. Is there any better comparison for J.R. Smith than the Bluth family? He just always believes there's going to be money in the banana stand. He acts like Joe Bluth all the time. Like, that's him. Every range of possibility is the Bluth family with J.R. Smith.
I imagine him running around on a Segway with JaVale.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, keep going. J.R. Smith, or Josh Smith, Larry Sanders.
Josh Smith, Larry Sanders. It's a kind of an intriguing idea.
That's a lot of length at the rim.
Yeah.
And, I mean, God, yeah, I think you could throw out a front court of, if you get to keep them, of John Henson, Larry Sanders, Josh Smith, or say you have to give Henson, you know, Udo, Sanders, Josh Smith. I mean, you could easily be the best defensive team in the league almost instantly.
I said this morning, and I haven't checked Twitter to see what the responses are yet, but I basically asked this question, if you know, there's all these things of like CP3 got traded and signed a waiver for his ETO just to give the Clippers another year. What if you got Josh Smith to sign a document that says he'll only take one mid-range jumper or three-pointer per game?
Or what if you traded for him and got him to sign a do not resuscitate? I mean, what are you asking here?
That's my thing. It's like, what if you actually got him to sign a document where – he will only contractually agree to only take one jumper per game.
I mean, this is what you do if you're negotiating with him for the summer, because his talent is there and his defense is there, but his decision making isn't. Like, you've got to have incentive laden like performance clauses in the contract in which like mid range to long range twos are limited. Otherwise, he'll get like a $2 million bonus or something. I mean, that's really how it has to be structured.
I'll give you 5 years, $70 million, but in return, you can only take 1.5 jumpers per game.
Yeah, otherwise, it's cut to 40.
You lose $20,000 for every jumper you take.
Yes.
Like, seriously, how much? Like, wouldn't that be amazing? And if you offered him the money, he'd be like, "I'm insulted, but that's a lot of money."
Yeah.
Well, and then it would be like this really great thing, and you could do like a website about it on your website.
Yeah,
like,
just
how much money has Josh Smith cost himself?
A smoothtracker.com? Yeah, no, you could give him the max. You could absolutely give him the 5-year max, and then just have that clause of for every long range jumper that you miss, we subtract $25,000.
$25,000.
So it's up to you, buddy. How much money do you want?
And we'll donate to charity because you make so much money, I think, off of the attention.
Yeah, exactly.
See, you and I should run a team. This is like...
I mean, we shouldn't, but this is a good idea.
This is a good idea. What? I've been really shocked to hear that Eric Gordon's been floated. I've been really surprised.
I'm not, because I still don't think that franchise likes him.
As a reminder of the fact that I get irritated when reporters
when
or
anybody when anybody says something
when anybody talks to someone and then they think that that person is being honest with them and no one else,
right?
It makes me crazy, and that's why I'm like, oh well, the person I talked to who's not very high up but is a person who inside the Hornets organization was lying to me. Like, that's just like the conclusion that you reach. I'm not like, oh, these people are just making up stuff, which I think is absurd.
Right.
It makes me crazy. Like, no, I was the one that got jerked around,
right?
You know, instead of I am the one who knocks, I am the one who got jerked around.
Yes.
That's how it works.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what happened, okay? Is that this person told me that he's been really great, that they haven't had any issues with him since he came back from rehab. But
yeah. I mean, the talent's there, and as long as he's healthy, you know, it's a great contract. You get him on the max if he's healthy, oh my God. It's almost a steal in that, you know. In theory, but...
Just trade him back to the Clippers.
For Eric Bledsoe.
Just trade him back to the Clippers for Bledsoe, DeAndre Jordan, and the Tompkins kid, who I still like. And a first-round pick.
Yeah.
I said this a lot on Twitter, but I want to get on the podcast. If you're a fan of the Jazz, if you're a fan of the Raptors, if you're a fan of...
Oh, I like where this is going.
If you're a fan of the Kings, I'm sorry, if you're a fan of the Kings. If you're a fan of... any number of teams that have been continuously trapped in misery. Like, the Pistons have kind of, they have a model. They're kind of, there's some light at the end of the tunnel, so they've moved out of this territory. If you're a fan of the Suns, most especially, do not trade for Josh Smith. Do not trade for Eric Gordon. Do not trade for Kevin Garnett. Do not trade for any of these other guys. Listen to me very closely. Tank the next 2 years and get Andrew Wiggins. I don't want to, like, I will not write about this because I don't want to put too much pressure on the kid. Except for these comments on these podcasts and on Twitter. Like, I'm okay with that. But that's what you do. Even if you don't get Wiggins, if you get Jabari Parker, that's fine. The 2014 draft class has two guys in it, and possibly there's two other guys that they're looking at that may be that good, who legitimately are in the consideration for the kind of franchise changers. It's not 2003, but it's a class like that.
Let me throw this in there. And people undoubtedly take this the wrong way, but... just listen carefully to what I'm saying. I don't know that Andrew Wiggins is going to be a franchise player. I don't know that he's not going to be a franchise player. The hype is certainly there, and it seems justified. But if he ended up just being a borderline all-star throughout his career, it would not shock me. If he ended up being a franchise player, it would not shock me. But I just want people to remember, maybe go back, because people will deny what they said. But I just want people to go back 2 years. Go back 2 years and look at what was being written about Austin Rivers.
Yep.
You just got to be careful with high school guys because they're playing against high school players.
Yeah.
You know, some schools play against very good competition. It's still high school players, which is that's the competition available to them, so that's who they have to play. It's not fair to criticize that level of competition, but Austin Rivers 2 years ago was being written as a must-have top draft pick.
Yep.
And I'm not saying Andrew Wiggins is Austin Rivers. I'm just saying I would be careful about saying you need to have him.
No, I get that you hate Hope, but my point more is that...
Okay, as long as I get to put that out there, and at the same time you get to reestablish that I hate Hope, we're good.
my bigger point is, because here's my thing, the chance to roll in the dice on Wiggins or Jabari Parker or whoever you get in that draft class being the kind of guy that changes your franchise forever is way, way better than signing Josh Smith and hanging around the sixth seed and then losing.
That I completely agree with.
That's my thing.
Yes, that's a great point.
Especially for a team like the Jazz, where you've made the playoffs a lot,
right?
You've made the playoffs a lot. You've had a good run. Aim high. Like, there are teams I don't want to aim high. Like the Bobcats, I don't want to aim high anymore. Just get better. Like, it's time for you to have a longer. You need a Hawks from 2002 to 2007 run where you're awful, but you're like, oh, well, hey, they're actually getting some athletic. Like, these guys could be okay in a couple of years,
right? That's a weird thing about the Wolves is people are like, oh, should the Wolves start tanking and trying to get a good draft pick? Yeah. And I think, like, almost every time I would say yes, but I really think, like, this team just has to learn how to win.
Yeah.
This, like, whether they're healthy or not, like, they have to get wins to get, you know, you can only sidestep so long before you have to move forward. And I agree with your point. There are some teams where it's just like, screw getting home runs in the draft right now or hoping for that. Like, just get incrementally better.
Right, there are teams like that. But the Suns need to completely scrap this ridiculous plan that they've constructed. Quit trying to spend to get in these players and still not actually spend because of Sarver. Like, quit, stop doing all that. Like, roll your dice with the 2014 draft class. That'd be really frustrating for fans because it's like, you want me to wait a year and a half?
Right.
I'm like, yeah. Like, that's, because honestly, it's one where...
If it works, the 5 years after that, you won't even remember that year and a half.
Exactly. And I mean, if you get the number one pick and you draft Wiggins and it turns out Jabari Parker's the real deal and Wiggins is just only a marginal all-star if he's Ralph Sampson or whatever, tough luck. Yep. But taking that shot is way better than, like, oh, remember that 98-95 win where Josh Smith hit the three to win versus the Clippers in the first round before we got beat in five.
Right.
You know? Aim high. Like, there are teams that need to aim high.
The only thing I would disagree with on the Suns there is I think if they could get Eric Gordon, that would be brilliant. I think that would be a great move for them because of their training staff. I still think they're bad enough to where they can execute your plan while having Eric Gordon on the roster.
Yeah.
But other than that, I like the whole Josh Smith thing. Like, I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing. Well, it's been a good long podcast.
I don't even think we should do a preview of tonight's games. There are games tonight. You should watch them. You should read about them tomorrow on CBSSports.com when we write about them.
Yeah, there's not really many. They're all that compelling. So
no, not really.
So yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. Normal stuff. Normal schedule. Lots of good stuff this week. We'll have trade stuff every single day for you. We'll have all of your coverage. Man, if you guys want to cover trades, we are the place to be. I don't think anybody in the business does it as well as we do in terms of actual content, because we're not just going to bring you the breaking news because you can get that on Twitter, but we're going to get you what it means. And that's a big part of this, is you need to figure out what these trade rumors mean and what the deals mean and how it breaks down, and we're the best place for that. So please keep an eye on basketball.
Oh, I see what you did there. I will talk to you tomorrow, Matt. That was clever.